Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine for February 22nd, 2015. I'm your host, David McLaughlin. Thank you for joining us. Welcome, as always, Catherine Smith.
Hello, greetings from Atlanta.
And welcome back-to-back weeks again, Tim Shiflett.
Good evening, sir.
Oh, good to have you, Tim. I can't wait till that's not even noteworthy. It's just like old habits, and we're getting there quick.
Yeah.
But, tonight got a big show. David McDowell of the Mississippi Democratic Trust is going to be our special guest here in a few minutes, talking to us about that group and all of Mississippi Democratic politics. I will tell y'all, he comes with one of the highest recommendations you can. Robert Hooks, who's a longtime guest on Mississippi Politics, highly recommended David. And so if you know how good Robert is, if Robert thinks David's good, then he's got to be. Because Robert understands Mississippi politics as well as anybody, if not better than anybody. But let's kind of talk about some other things first in this first 10, 15 minutes of the show. And one that is really a nationwide issue, but is more of an issue, I think, in the South because the legislatures are more Republican, are more conservative. It's getting more play there. And probably Oklahoma, I believe, has already passed something. There's a new AP history exam, of course, the advanced placement tests have been around for quite a while. And if you're not familiar with what that is, you can take a course in high school. You pass the course, you get high school credit. Additionally, there'll be a test that is standardized across the country. And if you score a certain level or better, you can get college credit that you can take to whatever college that will accept that nationwide. Some of them are very basic, like U.S. history, and probably every college in the country has a U.S. history course. And so that's a very portable one. There's other ones like human geography that not as many colleges have and different ones. And there's all kind of AP courses as well. The Republicans have decided that this AP history class is too controversial. I think they believe it doesn't have enough as regarding American exceptionalism and that kind of thing. I get the gut feeling that this is part of – we always talk about the Republicans' war on science. It almost seems to me as if it's more of a Republicans' war on knowledge. It's not just science. It's any kind of knowledge sometimes that the Republicans seem fearful of. Catherine, when you read about this article, and this article we actually sent was – it started up in August, but it just continues on with these legislative sessions. What do you make of this?
Well, I don't know if it's so much about knowledge as it is about critical thinking. I think that – The controversy seems to be around the fact that it's not just historical facts that they're being tested on and that they're teaching, but it's facing some of the downfalls that we've faced in our American history, and critically examining some of the things that have happened in our American legacy that we don't have a lot to be proud of. I think one of them, of course, is the long history of slavery. But they also talk a little bit about the Japanese internment and just some of the things that we really don't have to be proud of, but, how they happened and what it means to our history. And I think it seems to me that the attack is as much on knowledge as it is on critical thinking and examining our history and with a critical eye, and that seems to be a problem for some of our conservative legislators.
Yeah, I mean, Tim, we could leave out slavery, we could leave out the Japanese internment camps, but that really doesn't make it go away. It's just denying it. Sometimes it's more cathartic to admit a fault and say we've grown from it, which I believe almost everyone in America would say that we're a better country than we were in the early 1800s. We're even a better country than we were in, say, or at least a less fearful country, hopefully, than we were in the 1940s. Does denying it and just sweeping it under the rug and not testing on it make it better?
Well, of course not. You know, it seems like every last thing is turned into a political football. And I think in this case they're doing this in order to stir up their base. If it wasn't this, well, I guess they'd move on to something else. You know, history is history. There's good, there's going to be bad, too. It can't be glossed over forever. The Indians did have their land stolen. Blacks were slaves for over 200 years and did most of the hard work, including the construction of the U.S. Capitol and the White House. Jim Crow did happen. That Japanese-American internment did happen. Lincoln did suspend habeas corpus. To me, the real problem is that Truman said it best. History, he said, is written by the winners. Don't like to be reminded of their failures along the way. But see, our failures, our mistakes, are as big a part of who we are as our successes. That's not running the country down. Telling the truth is not running the country down. Those mistakes are what we learn from.
Exactly.
In order that they're not repeated again. Because if you don't learn from the failures, you are doomed to repeat them. So, you know, I don't get it. I mean, what do they want? Well, you know what? They want their own test that they can agree with, and they only can agree with.
But you won't get that.
Yeah,
but you know, they do these things with the textbooks. Like Texas had some history textbook revisions. But when you're talking about this AP course, you're not going to get this national group to write it just for them. It's not they're going to have a blue state test and a red state test. So therefore, some of these very conservative red states like Oklahoma, I think they've been talking Georgia, unfortunately, are going to talk about dropping this. If they drop these tests, what's that going to do to the educational offerings in those states? I mean, what's the, you know, educational equality from state to state going to look like? Catherine?
It's not going to be good. I mean, you can almost see private coaching company, you know, tutoring companies popping up to offer, you know, the standardized AP classes for kids that, for, you know, students that want to take them, but can't, don't have them offered in the public schools, which again creates a, you know, higher class of, you know, people who are able to take them. It's just, it's ridiculous if you ask me. But
well, I always thought standardization
was a good idea.
Oh, I think it's you know, it is ridiculous. I mean, having these things like this, and here's the thing: Republicans are always. You know, a lot of times they'll be upset and criticize colleges and college academia for being too liberal. Well, lots of states or a lot of systems will have dual enrollment programs. Well, are they going to go after those next because they don't want, 16, 17-year-old minds being shaped a year earlier by these evil liberal college professors? Where does this end? I mean, you just... It's so silly to be protected from knowledge. You know, you want to protect your kids from driving too fast and drinking and drugs and things like this. But knowledge, you know, if your child's problem is the biggest thing is reading a book, learning about history, you don't really have many problems. And
right.
So I find this kind of crazy that they want to do this. Cause,
well, look, education is a progressive initiative.
Yeah.
It always has been. And the more conservative the other party gets, the more they attack institutions of higher learning as these bastions of ultra-liberals and communists and this and that and the other. This is not anything new. It's just worse now than it's ever been because of how far that party has lurched to the right.
Yeah, and here's the thing. We talked that, you know, I mentioned the Republicans' war on science. I have a feeling that some of the concepts on some of the science tests may be controversial to them. Do they start then attacking the science classes? And I don't know right offhand all of the AP courses, but you would begin to think, well, okay, world history, maybe there's something in world history they're learning, or human geography, all these different offerings they have. You know, hopefully the math is safe. The literature is always very controversial at times. There could be some books that you have to read for the AP English courses. Those could be under attack. The whole AP system could be put asunder in your more conservative red states if somebody just doesn't stand up and, you know, say stop the madness, if you will. And I wonder if some Republican legislators with kids that are very bright, that they are proud of the fact they're in honors AP type courses, say this is just nonsense. You know, we may be conservative on tax policy, we may be conservative on this policy, but just offering AP courses in our schools, this is a step too far. And it's really going to take, I think, some of the Republican legislators to rein in some of their colleagues. I hope they have the courage to do it.
It
but I think
certainly
that's where
is here. There's not any Democrats left. There's not enough Democrats down there to do anything.
Yeah, and then that's a lot of the states in the South. So hopefully that some of the Republicans will have to, on this initiative, and some others say this is too far. Well, I think our guest is called on in, so let's kind of segue over to Mississippi. We can get back to education policy late in the show after we've, you know, done a good talking about Mississippi. But welcome to the show, David McDowell of the Mississippi Democratic Trust. David?
Hey, how are you guys today?
Good.
Good to have you.
Thank you.
It's great to hear you all talking about education. That is, we are at the front lines of that right now here in Mississippi, and it's something that has pulled a lot of these local legislative candidates in my neck of the woods into 2015 races. Is the line drawn on those kind of issues?
Yeah, well, I guess, you know, we want to start off with your background and things like that, but let's kind of finish this off. Have these AP courses, have they come under fire in Mississippi, or is that something that's not really debated yet?
You know, I haven't heard specific debates on that, but just general funding, just basic funding in Mississippi is so much under fire and has officially become a purely partisan issue. That it has shaken things up significantly in Mississippi. So I haven't seen that fight just yet. I'm sure that there's something in the works. I have, you know, I don't think I'm expressing any surprise here, but I think there are some people in the higher ups who are writing laws for Southern legislators, Republicans all over the country. So they tend to crop up in more than one place at a time.
Yeah, there seems to be a playbook. Yeah, unfortunately, I'd heard, it's been a decade ago or so, but I'd heard that in Mississippi, compulsory kindergarten or funding statewide kindergarten was a racial issue, not an educational issue and things like that, and I thought that was kind of sad. Well, let's kind of back up. And, David, we know you've been involved in a lot of campaigns that have touched on the kudzu vine, like Brad Morris's campaign and others. Give us a little bit about your background.
Sure. So I grew up in Louisiana, and I moved to Mississippi to come to the University of Mississippi. And so I've been living in Oxford since about 2007. When I graduated, actually before I graduated, I was working on local county races, and I managed the local mayoral race here in 2013. And before that, I did work on Brad Morris's congressional campaign in the first congressional district in 2012. These days, I work for the Mississippi Democratic Trust. We are a statewide PAC that focuses on initiatives and political races, Democratic races, from municipal all the way to statewide. So we cover the gambit. My particular work is the field director for our project we call Project 2015, which focuses on taking back the House, the state legislature, for Democrats.
Yes. Well, I got Catherine and Tim on here with me, and I don't want to ask all the questions up, so I'm going to pass it quicker than usual over to Catherine.
Sure.
So the Mississippi Democratic Trust is a PAC, so it's not affiliated with the Democratic Party. Is that correct?
It is correct. We work hand in hand. We have a great relationship with them. I talked to Ricky Cole, the director of the Democratic Party, once a day. We are allies. We are part of the process. We just offer a helping hand in resources and in other ways where we can help where they might, you know, be limited.
And how is the Democratic Party of Mississippi doing?
I think we are growing. We are definitely on the right track. We are catching up. You know, we dug ourselves into a hole. I don't think that I'm I don't think that I'm offending anybody by saying that. So it's going to take a little bit of time to get out of it, but we're doing it at a lot quicker pace than most. I'm very proud of the work that the executive director of the trust, Brandon Jones, has played in that effort. I can tell you that I'm proud to donate. I call myself a Yellow Dog Democrat, and I have a card carrying membership to it here at the Mississippi Democratic Party, where I give a little bit every month to make sure that I'm supporting them. And I'm happy to do that. And I think that at some time in the past, I think a lot of people might have been afraid to do that, and that's certainly not the case anymore.
Well, that's good news.
Mm-hmm.
And are you pretty much gearing up now for 2015 for the elections? And are you doing like voter registration and all that kind of stuff, or are you focusing more
sure.
on candidate recruitment, or what's the
So I have been on the ground with the trust in some capacity since the end of 2013. However, we are in the last week, so Friday is the filing deadline for candidate recruitment. So my night and day work is you know, I feel a little bit like a college football recruiter traveling all over the state, making sure we get our candidates of choice to sign on the dotted line and getting their letters of intent into the Mississippi Democratic Party headquarters, and I think we've done a great job so far. We've got a lot of great candidates across the state, and we've got a few more that I'm working on. And then, you know, just this past week, I think we've been working very hard to get the word out about some of our statewide candidates who have filed and some of our regional candidates who are filed. You know, Vicki Slater, a Madison attorney and businesswoman, has just filed to run for governor against Phil Bryant. I am so excited about that.
Excited to hear about that, too. I have a good friend and coworker mm-hmm. in Mississippi who's really excited about that race.
I am just pumped up. You know, I've never even met her, and, you know, I consider myself someone with the pulse, but that's because I'm in North Mississippi. So I'm just so excited that people are feeling – I have a ton of friends, you know, but it just excites me that there is a wave of support across the state for this fresh new voice that is going to be able to effectively, I think, respond to just the abhorrent effort that Phil Bryant has made as a governor.
Well, I'm going to pass this to Tim now for his questions. Go ahead, Tim.
Sure. Yes, sir. I want to ask you about Jim Hood, because obviously he breaks the mold. How does he defy the odds in this?
That's a really great question. I think Jim does a really good job doing his job. He's just an incredibly effective attorney general. He works very hard for the people. He delivers. what he promises on, which is protecting the people of Mississippi. He goes very hard after lawbreakers, all the while, you know, Attorney General Hood just brought billions of dollars back for a lot of states, but a lot of that money came to Mississippi against S&P for the rules that they broke in 2008 during the financial crisis. And those kind of things resonate on Main Street. When you go after the people on Wall Street who screw things up in Mississippi, that resonates. And on top of that, you know, he makes sure that he's going after the people who are breaking laws right here as well. And it means for a safer Mississippi. And he, you know, that's just part of it. I think he just does his job very well, and people recognize that. You know, it's important to note, Mississippi has never had a Republican attorney general. General Hood is one of the reasons why, of course, he's going for his fourth term there. But you know, we like our Democratic attorney generals.
So to the average voter in your state, of course, who is very conservative, if they're white, they don't think of the attorney general in political terms, then. Is that what you're saying?
I think that certainly the Republicans in the state have tried to frame it that way for a very long time, and that may at least a little bit be the case. But, you know, I think that General Hood, if that's the case, I think they've seen that Democrats are just better at doing it. That General Hood is just better at doing it. He has faced well-funded Republicans. The legislature and the Senate have regularly tried to beat back his ability to do his job with laws that relegate him to a corner. And when it comes time for those things to happen, a lot of times, sometimes Republicans in the legislature, just like y'all were talking about earlier with education, they kind of step up and they say, whoa, whoa, whoa. The attorney general needs these powers, and because General Hood does a good job.
All right. Well, thank you, sir. Throwing it back to David.
Yes. Well, let's stay on that attorney general's race and Jim Hood. I did see that, you know, Jim Hood waited a little while to file for attorney general. There was some hope that he would run for governor, although it sounds like Victor Slater's kind of taken that spot. So that wasn't a need. You can talk to that, but then at the same time, I looked at the attorney general's race, and it looks like the Republicans have recruited Russ Latino, who's not an elected official. He's a lawyer. It looks like for a decent-sized law firm in Mississippi, but not necessarily the top-shelf candidate, given that I guess there's a chance that he may have not run again for re-election. Why did the Republicans not do a better job of recruiting on what could have been a open seat, or were they just that afraid of, you know, wasting somebody to run again in case he did remain in office?
Well, I think that I certainly don't want to speak 5 days before the filing deadline. Still anything could happen, and I definitely don't want to speak for General Hood in saying that. Latino isn't a, you know, isn't someone who might be able to make some waves. You know, I think he'll take that race very seriously. I think everybody should take it seriously. I expect a hard fight. Republicans have shown time and time again that they should. And on top of that, you know, there are some Republicans out there right now suggesting that Vicki Slater isn't necessarily the type of candidate that can beat Phil Bryant. And to that, I would like to point to Kirk Fordyce, a Republican who was not necessarily considered a top-tier candidate when he ran for governor and won, and kind of changed the landscape. And I think that Vicki Slater can do some of the same thing. So with that, I'd like to I'm not going to count my chickens before they hatch with General Hood, and I hope he puts up the fight that I expect him to.
because that's what we've come to expect, and that's what Mississippi deserves.
Okay. Well, just looking down the list of races, it looks like the lieutenant governor's race is getting a lot of action. Not only is Tate Reeves, I guess, running for re-election, State Senator Michael Watson is running against him in the Republican primary. There's a rumor, I guess, that Chris McDaniels may also run against him in the Republican primary. And then on the Democratic side, Tim Johnson, who was a state senator Republican, also held other local offices, he's running for the Democratic nomination. An actor, a guy that ran for Greenwood mayor, Jelani Barr, he's seeking the Democratic nomination for lieutenant governor. Just give us a great sense of this race. Why does it have not all of the action, but probably more action than any other race on the ballot?
Well, I think, you know, they often call lieutenant governor light governor for a reason. I think a lot of these guys in the Republican primary are interested in maybe seeing what they can do 4 years from now. I think that includes when Phil Bryan is no longer on the ticket. Certainly that's my belief about Lieutenant Governor Reeves. On the Democratic side, Tim Johnson, I just think, is just one of those people who saw the light. You know, he saw the destructive policies take place in places where he grew up, like Kosciuszko, where the local hospitals are falling apart. He knows that the state senate is where a lot of these things are happening, and as you know, he was there, and he's looking to find a new leader for that spot. And I think he looked around for a long time, and he said, "Where's the leadership?" And he realized that it wasn't on the Republican side anymore, and decided to take a stab at it on the other end. And I'm very happy for it. I think he's a great representative of the Democratic Party here in Mississippi, as someone who understands the local issues enough to realize that, you know, Mississippians have been left behind. You know, I hadn't even heard, when this just shows how focused on the legislature I've been. When did Senator Watson jump into the race?
Well, I guess he didn't officially file.
Okay.
He's just looking strongly at it.
Right.
And so all these folks, I think, are you can tell that you get
sure.
this sense that people see Tate Reeves as beatable in the Republican primary. Why do you think that they have this sense?
Both of them
don't jump in.
That's a great question. I'm not really, my job title and my expertise do not fall in line with Republican thinking. I have a hard time giving them advice. I personally find Tate's track record to be awful, but not for the reasons that I think any of those Republican challengers would be. I think you'd be hard pressed to find a difference between some beliefs of Senator McDaniel and Lieutenant Governor Reeves. They have consistently voted to slash public school funding. You know, Reeves every once in a while sticks his head out of the sand to say, "Oh, I'm helping education," but never enough. And then, you know, they're just against Medicaid expansion at all costs. They're against raising the minimum wage for working Mississippians. So I find it, I think it's just this infighting. It's a personality fight, and I find it to be a little disappointing. But when it comes to policy differences, maybe nobody just wants to fight with Phil in that capacity. But that's a good question. Somebody could probably do a lot of research as to why anybody thinks that Tate Reeves is a better shot. I think it probably has to do with some hurt feelings in the Senate race of 2014.
Yeah, I mean, you can tell that Senate race is obviously the U.S. Senate race kind of colors a lot of things, thinking of where the Tea Party and the establishment is, and not only Mississippi, but a lot of states. Well, let me continue to pass it along, because there's a lot of other statewide races
Catherine, any questions you want to ask?
I wanted to ask about the State House and the State Senate. Do you think there's any chance that you can, you know, recover either side for the Democrats in 2015?
Sure. So it's a much bigger uphill battle in the State Senate. There are a lot of there's a deeper hole there, but that doesn't mean we're not making serious attempts at it. We've had a lot of switchers in a couple of years, right, over in the State Senate that have made it a little bit more difficult. Party switchers, I mean, but in the House, we have a great shot at it. It's my focus. We have a very serious recruiting effort that has been going on for a very long time, and we'll finish that up this week. We've got, I'll just tell you, I mean, there are 7 seats between the majority and the minority in the State House. And just to give you an idea, there are 2 that are very seriously strong candidates right here where I live in Lafayette County as of right now today. I think both of them will win. So we've got them across the state from top to bottom, coast to hills. And so I believe that come November, Democrats will have control of the Mississippi State House of Representatives.
Wow. That's very exciting. Mm. And so obviously this kind of effort takes a lot of money. So you've had been successful in your fundraising. I mean, if you started in 2013, you've probably been working. It sounds like that might not be your job, but so the fundraising has been going well, and you have resources to support those candidates?
Obligated call time as much as possible. You know, we have fundraisers across the state on a regular basis to get people to come out. I'll put in a little plug if anybody wants to help me out. Our website is msdemocratictrust.com, and we have an Act Blue account on that site. We'd love for you to just throw, you know, $10, $20, just a dollar if you think that could help, and just keep in touch, because we do have I'm talking a big game, but we've got to have the resources to do it. You know, it's a long state, and a lot of it is paying for gas to get to and from there. but we do believe that to be not only possible, but something that we have set as an attainable goal.
Well, congratulations on all that hard work, and now I'm going to pass it back to Tim again.
Sure.
Okay, and I would like to jump over to the special election in the 1st District, because that's, mm-hmm. 2 of those in the last 7 years. Why, first of all, has the governor seemed to drag his feet on actually calling the thing?
Well, I don't think that there's much to look into when you looked into Phil Bryant's thought processes in general. But I'm not, you know, I don't have a look into it even if I wanted to. However, you know, he's got his set time, and he's going to have to do it, and it's impossible for it to line up with a primary deadline, which will be in August. So it's going to have to be a completely separated special election. I suppose they may be trying to find a way into dealing with it or solidifying the candidate that they think is best. But this is, in this instance, this is merely a member of the 1st Congressional District, you know, just a citizen of the district. Our PAC is not federal, statewide. So when I look into it, it's purely based on my previous work in District 1 and my knowledge of it. It's going to be a toss-up. There are going to be a lot of people running in that special election. It will be very interesting. I really do not know why it has taken a while for them to figure out when it should happen.
Well, that what you just said segues into my next question. The last time I looked, there was anywhere from 15 to 20 possible Republican candidates in this race,
mm-hmm.
and one Democrat, of course, Travis Childers. Aren't the Republicans in general in the state getting a little antsy about that? Because they see a race, frankly, that they should win, and they can send another Republican congressman up to Washington.
Sure. I think at least something to do with, you know, when there are, you ever heard the saying when this is a college football reference, but, you know, when a coach has two quarterbacks to choose from going into the first game, you say when you got two quarterbacks, you don't have any quarterbacks.
Right.
I think it's possible that Republicans may have a little bit of a crisis of leadership up here in North Mississippi, and they're not really sure who they want, who the establishment or who the Tea Party or anybody really wants to be there. And you have to guess, we're just looking at numbers here, that it's going to come out of DeSoto County or Lee County. Those are just big pockets of votes and connections. Those are the serious towns and cities in the state. I do know of quite a few people, just potential Republicans who are looking at it from Oxford. I just don't see that to be a way to win. So I imagine that field will clear out when it comes time to file, and it won't be so long of a list.
Oh, okay then. David, back to you, buddy.
Well, let's stay on the special election just for a second. In this laundry list of candidates, you have the son of former Representative Nunley and the widow, both apparently listed as possible candidates. Is this a situation where they could be waiting to see if one of those family members wants to run and sort that out, or is that not a factor at all?
You know, I think if they may, I don't think that there's any deference to them that may, if I were offering them advice, I think that would be a good way to hold the seat and give everybody a little bit of time to think about 2016. And that may be their line of thinking. That's what I've heard from a few Republicans along the way. But I don't want to take away any I have not heard from either of them personally or elsewhere if they may very well be candidates and people who want to serve to the first district. So, but if I had to guess, there may those two on the list and maybe a few others are there to hold the place for when a full cycle shows up.
Yeah, and I saw another set of candidates, Amanda and Gray Tolleson. I looked and I could not see any relation. You probably know. Are they related?
They're married.
That's what I figured, but there was no bio. One was a Twitter account. One was a law office page for her. It didn't tell spouse. But I had a feeling they were related in some way. So there's another one. They're going to, you know, figure out if one's going to run. You wouldn't think they'd run against each other.
Gray was a state senator, or is a state senator, in Fort Lafayette County. He was a Democrat, a strong progressive Democrat, until the day after he won his reelection in 2011 and switched to the Republican Party on a dime. So there are no Democrats who would support him in that special, or very few. I don't want to say, and I have a hard time believing that the Republican primary would bode very well for someone who has a 10-year track record of supporting things that he used to somehow care about.
Yeah, that's good insight that we wouldn't, just the average outside observer wouldn't know. Well, let me ask you one final question on this. And, of course, if Catherine and Tim have follow-ups, they can ask them. But let's just say Travis Childers just passes on this race. There are no other Democrats on this list that I'm looking at. It may not be the same one Tim's looking at. Where does the Democratic Party go to find a candidate? Although it sounds like Gray Tolleson, if he, you know, would re-see the light, would be a good one.
Well, I don't think that Gray. I think he's burnt his bridges enough on the other side that he wouldn't be seen as a viable Democratic candidate any longer. But I mean, it's in his last 4 years, he's made every effort to change his positions as needed. But, you know, I think that there are some people who are probably looking into this race as a possibility. I'm just, you know, I hear flurries every once in a while of other people. You know, it's a very difficult race, and you have to do it every 2 years. And in this instance, just like Travis would know better than anybody else that it's not even every 2 years. It's this will be three elections in three years, and so it's very hard to somebody's got to be prepared for the long road ahead, and I think that there are other people out there making sure that happens. I'm not privy to those conversations, but I believe that there will be a Democrat in that race, a viable Democrat, someone who Democrats can get behind in order to represent North Mississippi.
Oh yes, well, and if it was like a kind of open deal, the Democratic candidate is going to do very well on the first primary day because the Republicans will split the vote so many ways.
Correct.
Yes, well, let me ask you another question. And of course, like again, Catherine and Tim, break in if you need to ask something. Secretary of State, State Auditor, State Treasurer, State Agriculture Commissioner, and State Insurance Commissioner. Right now, Politics One, and they're not the only database candidates, but they're one of the best, have no Democratic candidates listed for any of those races. Are there some candidates you know about that you can share with us? Now, we know there may be candidates you can't share, but if you can share any, tell us.
Yeah, I generally on those I know leading up to their announcement. I expect a few more announcements in the coming week, but I don't have any names for you. I wish I could break some news for you tonight, but I just don't have it. So that's where we stand on those. I believe that we should have close to a full slate of candidates that we can be proud of from top to bottom.
Yeah,
just got five more days to go for it.
Well, and of those races I mentioned, not Secretary of State, not Agriculture Commissioner, Insurance, Treasurer, Auditor. There's a Republican challenger in the primary, it looks like, is already filed,
right,
already announced, for each of those. Now, they seem to kind of vary in quality. Is this just a case of Mississippi's a southern state, and Republicans think, well, if we get elected, they got to run the Republican primary to beat them? Or are there real flaws with some of these Republican incumbents to where people smell blood in the water?
I think that there are three parties in the state of Mississippi right now, and one of them the largest one is the Democratic Party. The other two are the Tea Party and the Republican Party, and so they are making their fight. I personally would like to see them split off and call themselves what they are and run against us three ways, but you know that just hasn't happened yet. Most Republicans are fundamentally flawed just by their line of thinking, but I think that the candidacies do present interesting possibilities, and I imagine a few of those fights will be very serious ones, including, you know, what we talked about earlier in the lieutenant governor race. Is it auditor? They all flow together. Where the mayor of Madison, Mary Hawkins Butler,
yeah,
is running.
Yeah, and that looked like the top shelf challenger of what was listed was Mary Hawkins Butler, yeah, running against Stacey Pickerins for auditor.
And then the other one that I think would be one to watch for outside observers is Treasurer, with Lynn Fitch being challenged by a first-time businessman who has quite a personal fortune of his own that he can put up a big fight.
Yeah. And so it'd just be interesting to see is just all these folks getting challenged in the primary, because a lot of times these down-ballot races, unless you've done something to get in the news in a bad way, you're in pretty good shape. You start out with a better 50% chance of winning, and so I just found that curious that so many had challengers. Well,
these are personality fights about the Tea Party.
That's how
I would define it.
The color, a lot of Republican politics, particularly in the South. Before I let you go, Catherine, Tim, any further questions for David?
No, but just keep up the good work. Sounds great.
Well,
Thank you, I appreciate it.
And it's not about what's going on now, but it's about 2 years down the road. You've described your group as a group that focuses on in-state races down to the local level. What about the presidential race? Will you be involved in it?
Well, my PAC certainly will not be. We all have our opinions about who we like. I certainly see Mississippi eventually being a state that could be in play for the Democratic incumbent by 2020. Just by the way the demographics are going and the shift. If Barack Obama actually won more votes in Mississippi in 2012 than he did in 2008, which is one of the few states where that actually happened. This is happening, and it's not just that he won a bigger percentage, he won more votes. So he did both. There is a shift occurring, and I think that there's a real possibility that Mississippi could be in play very soon. On top of that, there's a lot of talk among Republican secretaries of state across the South who want this this Southern Super Tuesday. This is what they call the Southeastern Conference Super Tuesday. That could really make Mississippi a early prospect for our future Democratic nominee. And I certainly. I've made no secrets. I would like to hopefully be a delegate there in 2016, and I'm looking forward to hopefully casting my vote for Hillary Clinton personally.
All right. Thank you, sir. David?
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, David McDowell, thanks for being on the show and telling us all about Mississippi Democratic Trust and Mississippi politics. I'm sure with this being an election year, we'll have you on again. But if one last time you want to tell us where folks can learn more about your group, you can give us the website and whatnot.
Yeah, so our website is www.msdemocratictrust.com, or check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/msdemocratictrust. We're on Twitter at msdemtrust, and you can follow me on Twitter. I talk about everything from politics to my pet goat. That's DG McDowell, would love to continue the conversation elsewhere.
All right. Well, thanks for being on.
Thank you, David.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Y'all have a great night.
Yeah, you too. Well, David was a great guest until about 30 seconds ago. Now we all saw our listeners. They're all looking on his Twitter account to learn about his pet goat.
Good to have myself, by the way.
I guess I'll be talking about myself if I can resist the go here. But seriously, thanks again for David McDowell for being on. Good to learn about Mississippi, one of the kind of the more important states in these odd years. And so we're going to kind of just keep track of them and Kentucky and others. Well, we got just a few more minutes on the show. We are talking education. David told us he came to Mississippi because of education, going to Ole Miss.
And so let's stay in that vein. And this is one I actually presented y'all last week. I found a different article presented again. And that is, we can talk about Rand Paul and Scott Walker, but I want to start off with Scott Walker. Scott Walker, to me, one of the most dangerous and most controversial politicians in America today, is going to run for the Republican nomination. We heard last week that Public Policy Poland, that Tom has him, you know, just rapidly rising up the, you know, I'm trying to look for the right word, popularity scale among Republican voters. But the one thing that is very unusual about Scott Walker's biography for a politician running in the 21st century, he does not have a college degree. You know, you have to have a college degree to do a lot of things in America. It's not a requirement for a leader of the free world. But do you think, Catherine, the American voters are going to see it as a requirement when they go into the ballot box in the polling booth?
You know, I wish that they would, but I don't think they will. Unless it gets a lot of attention. Unless he, you know, like in debates or something, he comes off looking, you know, uneducated and unprepared. But I mean, I think he's a pretty polished guy. I don't think he'll do that. And, I mean, I think it's, you know, I always say there's got to be more people in this country who are better prepared than someone who doesn't have a college degree. I mean, I don't have a college degree, and it's one of the things that I'm, you know, sort of embarrassed about, having not completed college. And I'm not embarrassed, but it's a shortcoming, I would say. But I think that for someone to be running as the president of the United States, considering that most of our previous presidents have advanced degrees, and typically, at least in the last 100 years, they usually have at least a bachelor's degree or some kind of advanced degree. I just think it seems like there must be someone who's better prepared than he is.
Yeah, it seems like these days, a lot of times we'll know where presidents went to college. It's not just they went to college degree. That's why I think it'll come up. I mean, I know President Obama. He got his law degree at Harvard. I think he went to Occidental undergraduate. George W. Bush, law degree Texas, or postgraduate school in Texas, went to Yale, or didn't even Harvard and Yale. He's the twofer. President Clinton, Georgetown, Yale. I mean, we know Jimmy Carter, Georgia Tech, the Naval Academy. I mean, we seem to know these things, and I don't think I'm the only strange person out there that can name a lot of these colleges, so it's kind of a feather in the cap of the college. Tim, what's this going to say about Marquette? That's where he actually attended and did not complete his degree. And Marquette's not from what I understand, it's not a bad school. It's a pretty solid learning institution back there in Wisconsin.
Actually a fine school.
That's what I'm saying. So he's obviously not a dumb guy. I mean, if somebody, yeah, even though I called him, you know, controversial and dangerous, I'm not going to call him dumb. I think if he was dumb, I wouldn't be that scared of him.
85% of New Hampshire Republicans who he will face down early, they say he's still qualified to be president, even though he doesn't have the degree. And we know that 68% of all citizens in this country have no degree. So that's normal, just not for a president. Let's see if my failing memory can serve me here. I believe 11 of our presidents have master's level degrees. Of course, we know that Harry Truman was the last president who did not have a college degree. But for one thing, he ascended to the presidency because of the death of FDR. Plus, he had been in Washington for 11 years. Plus, he didn't have to be president on television or the internet.
Right.
I believe Grover Cleveland, you got to go all the way back to him to find someone who has no advanced education of any kind beyond high school. that don't necessarily make a good or bad president. But I do know this, even though 68% of the people in this country don't have a college degree, they obviously do have a habit of electing presidents that do have college degrees. So somebody not having the degree would be, well, the exception to the rule. Now, let me ask you this. Do you think Bush and his folks are trying to figure out a skillful way to use this to go after Walker? I know he'd have to be very, very careful with this. It could blow up in his face. But don't you think he'll try to use this?
I think the tactic that a lot of his opponents will use is something like this. I don't think there's anything wrong with this, but the general election voter may have a problem with this, and we would lose to Hillary Clinton because of his lack of a degree. That's the tact. You then say, you know, it's not me. It's the, you know, those other folks. But we can't lose, therefore he's persona non grata because of it. Catherine, could you see that being the attack?
You know, the only thing I always worry about when you start down that path is this whole criticism of being elite, you know, the academic elites, and, you know, and like Tim's, what was the number you quoted, 68%?
Yeah. Yeah.
Of Americans 68. Don't have college degrees.
Right.
So they're
going
to be like, well, I made it, you know, why can't, you know, I mean, you know, we go back and forth between wanting a president and leaders, not just presidents, but leaders, you know, senators, congressmen, congresspeople, who are smarter and more accomplished than we are. But then we also want the average guy who you want to have a beer with. And it's a really difficult balance, and it's a challenge. And I'm not sure how you message around that without, you know, irritating some people while ingratiating others. I think it's a tough battle for the Republican Party.
But Catherine, don't you think the American people at the end of the day love to place their presidents up on a...
Yeah, well, I think they... Some of them like to place them up on a pedestal, and then some of them like to try to knock them off it.
But in general, don't you think the American people want their president to be what they perceive as, I'm not going to say a cut above the average person, but you guys get what I'm getting at, right?
Yeah, I get what you're getting at, but I think that sometimes, and I think especially in the climate that we're in right now, with this sort of dismissive attitude towards science and to a certain extent facts, I think that someone who has accomplished a lot in the business world, even if they are not well-educated, is going to be perceived as that cut above, whereas someone who's an accomplished academic or intellectual doesn't necessarily receive that from the average American. And I could be wrong. I'm not basing this on any statistics or anything. I'm just, you know, thinking about the way I see things when I hear people talking on radio and Fox News and whatever.
So
yeah.
The Republicans...
I think this is go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, I was going to turn to you on this, David. The average Republican voter in these primaries may follow a totally different tact than the general electorate at large in November on this issue, right?
Yeah, I think that's true.
They're going to be a little more forgiving of him just because I think they're going to like a lot of his bio. But I do think some of them may have like a kind of a little bit of an issue. Some of the more moderate voters might turn away. And I think some Republicans are going to be scared that in the general election, it's just not going to be a positive. And are they willing to take that risk? Now, they may say this is more of a 64 Goldwater type candidate, and we don't care. We're just going to, you know, vote our principles
and go down with the ship because we don't think we can beat Hillary Clinton anyway. So there are a lot of things at play. But I do think this is going to be probably, if you put a question about every candidate, this is going to be the greatest question about Scott Walker's candidacy. So I think we've covered that one, and we just went into record mode about 10 seconds ago. So looks like a good time to wrap up a pretty rapid show with the Kudzu Vine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good night,
well,
guys.
Catherine,
good night.
I'll let you and everybody
Oscars.
Else.
I will enjoy the Oscars.
All right.
Thank you.
Good night.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
With a strong and united